Welcome to episode 25 of the SWNZ podcast, the podcast for New Zealand Star Wars fans. My name is Matt.
And my name is Christy.
I want to start off today's podcast by mentioning the SWNZ YouTube channel again, which you may well be listening to this podcast on. But I just want to draw everyone's attention to it because, as I said earlier, we are working to put a bit more content on it, particularly content that relates to New Zealand Star Wars collectibles video content, that is. We've, of course, covered New Zealand Star Wars collectibles extensively on the SWNZ website, but it's quite fun to revisit them in a video format. I'm a big fan of New Zealand Star Wars collectibles, those collectibles that have cropped up that are unique to New Zealand, often showing up in the wild in supermarkets or dairies or so forth, going right back to 1977. And there are some really fun examples, some that we'll be looking at very shortly. For example, the New Zealand Women's Weekly comics, Star Wars comics that showed up in the magazines, one page per issue for a period of years, and harking right back to the likes of the tip-top Star Wars promotions that included stickers, games, paper masks, and so forth. I've got some very fond memories of, for instance, going into corner dairies, local dairies, and seeing the New Zealand version of the Topps bubblegum cards sitting on the counter and buying those one or two per week, and actually opening and trading Star Wars cards back in my childhood. There's been a few other good examples along the way. You'll have a few that you remember strongly seeing in the wild and in the interest and excitement of that sort of thing.
I particularly remember the mainland promotion from 2002, this tied in with obviously the release of Attack of the Clones, with there being a grand prize to the as a trip to Sydney to see the Star Wars exhibition that was there at the time. I was too young to afford a journey to Australia myself, so I collected a ton of these things in a desperate attempt to try and win the prize. So it unfortunately didn't pay off, but I have fond memories of all the posters and the stickers and asking my parents to buy all the branded milk and cheese and yogurt in that time.
That was an interesting promotion because, as I say, yeah, it was in almost every aisle of the supermarket. We saw it in the dairy aisle and the delicatessen and the sort of meats. And yeah, you collected tokens on various products and entered for the prize, but you could also send them in for sticker sets and so forth. So that's the sort of thing we're talking about that we're going to cover a little bit more on the SWNZ YouTube channel, taking a look back at those unique New Zealand collectibles, many of which are promotional items related to food runs, but of course there's also the whole range of vintage Toll Toys products back in the day when Toll Toys New Zealand and to a lesser extent Toll Toys Australia, who obviously are related companies, were responsible for bringing Star Wars toys into New Zealand, and there's some really interesting stories pertaining to those and some unique products and variations in New Zealand. As I say, New Zealand Women's Weekly is one that I particularly want to look at in the very near future. And the first look at the New Zealand Mandalorian coins is already up there. And also going to take a look at some at the history of the New Zealand Mint coins in the very near future. Take a look at the comparison between the early generation of those from 2011 and compare them against the more recent versions.
These promotions, I think, are particularly nostalgic because we don't get as many of them as they do in America. I know one of the recent sequel films had a big McDonald's tie-in promotion with toys and things like that. And it seems like it's just been a while since we've really had those. I'm, you know, thinking back, we had Clone Wars toys at McDonald's. We had a range of little toys and things like plastic ones and even some little plush when Burger King did an episode 3 tie-in.
Yeah, that was a while back now.
And yeah, it just sort of feels like we hear a lot about these tie-in things in the States. I mean, they have a lot of Star Wars in their grocery aisle, you know. They have soup and other random things, cereals and things like that, that have got Star Wars branding on them, and we just don't get quite the same sort of coverage.
It has been a while in New Zealand. We had cereals a few years back, a couple of times. They were okay. They weren't the most exciting, though. You got cereal boxes, but there wasn't a lot to collect beyond that. We had some products associated with the actual theatrical release of the movies. But I think this is part of the reason to really embrace and celebrate the New Zealand when they do show up in New Zealand.
We do get a little bit around sort of like Easter and Christmas with the chocolates, particularly at supermarkets and the warehouse, but it's been a little bit thin on the ground the last couple of years. We didn't even really get a chocolate Star Wars advent calendar, and Easter, it was just a tin. There was no chocolate associated with it. And I would have thought that anybody locally with the Star Wars / Disney license would have been going hard on advertising stuff as Baby Yoda. You know, trying and pulling in that, because it's kind of older Star Wars fans like it, younger Star Wars fans like it, men, women, boys, girls. Baby Yoda is kind of a universal thing, you know, like it doesn't have a specific demographic. And I was kind of mystified that they didn't do a lot. I could easily see a Baby Yoda sort of Easter egg with like cardboard ears or something on the outside of it. And we just didn't get that. So no, it's just, right. Yeah. It's a little sad that,
We haven't had good Star Wars product at Easter for a while. In the past, we've had it from Waikato Chocolate, which is a direct New Zealand company, and also Park Avenue, which is an Australian company, but we get a lot of licensed product from them here in the country. But
Kennington from the UK.
Kennington, yep. But not even, no advent calendars, no Easter eggs.
No.
Well, we should wait and see. But in the meantime, like I say, it's fun to focus on those strong large campaigns or small campaigns that that we've had in New Zealand and that's generated unique New Zealand Star Wars collectibles.
One of the main ones I can think of is I was really glad that when Pandora did their Star Wars jewelry charm collection, that was international and we got it in stores in New Zealand, because a lot of the times a company will do stuff and internationally, like Levi's, they were much harder to find in New Zealand. They weren't stocked at typical Levi's stockists. You had to have basically a Levi's store, of which there are very few in New Zealand. So that was sort of a frustrating one, where technically they had the international license, but it didn't really make much of an impact in New Zealand. So fingers crossed we'll see something exciting in the future soon.
So
maybe people will jump in for the Book of Boba Fett, because we've got a strong New Zealand connection to that one. I'm really crossing my fingers that somebody local, whether it be a fast food chain or a food company or something, jumps onto that one.
Yeah, there's some good opportunities there, and like I've said a couple of times already, that it's frustrating when we see stuff happening overseas but not locally, Star Wars stuff that's available overseas, but not locally. You know, sometimes that's product or product lines. Sometimes it's just promotions or campaigns. But either way, it's frustrating. And yeah, the best we can do is really celebrate the opportunities that do crop up locally. And there's been a few. Hey, but speaking of Boba Fett, the Book of Boba Fett and Boba Fett and his appearance in The Mandalorian, just out today, and we haven't even got this on the SWNZ website just yet, but we will very shortly. The eagerly awaited Season 2 Mandalorian Funko Pop Final Figures. Quite a large wave. A lot of people were expecting these to perhaps be released, announced, revealed on May the 4th. They weren't, but they are out now. This wave has some really cool characters, and we're looking forward to getting some ourselves. There is, of course, headlining it, because he was a key character in Season 2, the Temuera Morrison version of Boba Fett. There is an unmasked Din Djarin carrying a properly scaled Grogu. Bo-Katan comes with a helmet off, but there is also a chase variant with the helmet on. Two versions of Ahsoka, purchasable separately, one with the hood up, one with the hood down. A Dark Trooper, and three variations of Baby Yoda, aka Grogu, with his blue cookie, with his face hugger, and with a butterfly.
These are really fun ones. Like you said, it's a shame they didn't release them for May the 4th, but it's exciting. Funko always does pretty well with getting product to New Zealand quickly, you know, alongside other international territories. So it's great to see these ones available for pre-order locally quickly. Obviously, if you're going to pre-order them online, you might not be able to check out the Bo-Katan chase, that you might be running around a few stores if you're keen to grab the ultimate one.
I'm not sure
how
they handle that in-store purchase. They're going to be randomly assorted for online pre-orders. These are available for pre-order for a number of different retailers, all the regular sources, Mighty Ape, Pop Stops announced them already, and so forth. Imagine EB Games. Anywhere you can buy Star Wars Pops will eventually get these. Hey, interesting to note, though, I think most of the Grogu ones are actually retailer exclusives in the US, but they're going to be available just through standard sources here in New Zealand, which is quite cool.
I like that. Whereas Hasbro does things like the Amazon exclusives, and we just don't get them here because technically Amazon can ship internationally. But when it comes to the Funko store exclusives, we generally get them pretty widely available in New Zealand. We're not running around.
Yeah, well, speaking of store exclusives, that does crop up in the rest of the New Zealand store reports from the past week, because we've seen a few US retailer exclusives show up in New Zealand. But like you say, with the Pops, all of the exclusives tend to be available at all the retailers in New Zealand. With these action figures, they're distributed amongst various retailers locally, which is adequate. We could still get them, but it's a little bit challenging if your department store doesn't happen to stock them. And one good example of that, or two good examples, is the 6-inch Black Series versions of the Clone Wars figures. They come on cards that are based on the 2008 3.75-inch figures, scaled up to a 6-inch scale, branded with the Lucasfilm 50th anniversary logo, and there's 4 figures in this wave. They're available exclusively at EB Games. We've seen EB Games get a lot of exclusive figures in the last little while, and they're pricing them at $49. The wave includes Obi-Wan, Anakin, ARC Trooper Echo, and Clone Pilot Hawk.
I'm quite nostalgic about these. I remember when, you know, the Clone Wars first started airing, and these new range of figures with the backing card looks like a Clone Trooper helmet. I remember they didn't fit in the star cases.
Yeah.
So we couldn't fit any of the, they did a couple of special release ones and they wouldn't fit in the plastic cases.
That was an era where they did that a few times, where you really had to have specific packaging if you wanted to preserve them, protect them. But yeah, this was so that was 2008. These bubble versions came out on the blue and white Captain Rex background, but yeah, the bubble went right to the borders, right to the peripheries of the bubble, and that's what they're doing with these 6-inch figures. But they are a fun, nostalgic event. You don't need to collect lots, but a few key examples. You can put them beside your 3.75-inch figures if you still have them carded for a cool display.
Yeah, it's fun to see the licensing really tapping into the nostalgia factor for Star Wars. I mean, Star Wars has always been about nostalgia, you know, going back to how many different versions of the 1977 figures we have, either with the card backs or the figures themselves, jumbo figures. But for some of us, it's the slightly more modern stuff that is like really nostalgic for when we got into collecting and things like that. Some of us that may not have been around or old enough to collect figures in the 70s. So some of these sort of earlier ones, I tried to collect a lot of the sort of the 1997 stuff that was around, but it wasn't until it was the prequel era and the Clone Wars where I was actually old enough to go and buy the figures in store. So seeing those backing cards is sort of my sort of childhood nostalgia. So I'm excited to see them sort of being honored in these kind of reissue special edition Black Series figures.
Yeah, so they've done it a few times now, this upscaling of both the figure and the card back, and the nostalgic factor is quite interesting, huh? Because the obvious example is the representation of the actual vintage cards with the black cards with the silver racetrack. That's the obvious no-brainer. But in the not-too-distant past, first as a convention exclusive, then more recently for general release coming very soon, Episode 1 red card figures in this upscaled 6-inch format. And it's kind of funny to think that there was a point in time where those cards were just absolutely everywhere. There were entire aisles of them in department stores and toy stores in New Zealand. And you can still get them, obviously, on the secondary market. But that was a couple of decades back now. You know, seeing these 6-inch scale versions of the redback cards, it actually does remind us of an interesting time when prequel hype was just through the roof.
And of course, we're coming up on a significant prequel anniversary with Attack of the Clones being 20 years old next year. I'm sure that's going to be promoted heavily at Star Wars Celebration. And I'm kind of excited to see what else they might have in store. That movie in particular is one of my favorites. It was the sort of era of the prequels where I was really getting into it. Episode 2 was what kicked off my collecting journey. It was those Episode 2 figures. I was finally old enough, I had my own money, and I could buy as much as I could afford to. So I'm kind of hoping that we might see some of those era figures. I know it's maybe not quite as landmark as the Episode 1s, because that was like a big deal, but for me, because that's where I started collecting, that's kind of a fond thing for me. So
it feels like Hasbro has signified that they're going to do on an ongoing basis, they're going to do more versions of older figures in this upscaled format. So yeah, I think we will almost certainly see Episode 2 Attack of the Clones upscaled 6-inch figures next year. You mentioned celebration and the fact that we're likely going to see some celebration of episode two at that event. We talked about this celebration a lot last week. Since that time, no new developments in terms of stability, but I did notice that there is information out on the celebration event website that does talk about social distancing. And it really just did make me think about some of the things we were talking about last week, and I don't want to rehash it too much, but that the uncertainty associated with that is a real challenge. And it's really compounded by this presumption that there may be some need for social distancing. Can you imagine trying to do lines or panels or anything?
I'm still not sure how they're going to do that. I mean, yeah, mandating masks. No one is going to be allowed to wear helmets, at least at this stage. So no stormtrooper helmets.
So for anyone that hasn't seen those details, what Christy's talking about there is even though in regionally around America they're changing and relaxing some of the rules, the convention itself is saying that masks at this point and for the foreseeable future are necessary for conventions, and helmets do not count, and you can't wear a helmet because you can't determine if someone's wearing a mask under the helmet. So they're not actually going to let people wear costumes with helmets at these sort of conventions.
Which is about 90% of the 501st Legion. You know, you won't be able to wear a Vader helmet or a Stormtrooper helmet or any of those. And I guess there'll be some hardcore people that will just go in armor from the neck down, but some people are saying it's going to sort of affect the vibe of a convention if you've basically sort of clamp down on people wearing costumes, completed costumes anyway.
Yeah, so that's another layer of complexity to the whole planning situation. But I won't go on about that too much, but we will monitor the situation and probably talk about it from time to time in the podcast, whether or not celebration is going to be viable for people from outside the country or not. We'll get back to that. Circling back around to New Zealand store reports, though, we just talked about the 6-inch Clone Wars figures at EB Games. Also associated with the Lucasfilm 50th anniversary is two 3.75-inch vintage collection figures have been spotted at Farmers Department stores. That is the Endor Leia with removable helmet and Paploo the Ewok. These are still currently on sale, discounted to the level of $23.39, usually priced at $27.99. So they're pretty easy to grab because it seems like the full case assortment only includes these two figures, so potentially as many as four per case if we assume a 8-figure case. And most small to medium-sized stores get a couple of cases, so you know there's potentially 8 or more of each of these figures in each store. Fairly easy to grab if you want those. Oddly, this wave was supposed to include the AT-ST driver. Doesn't seem to have shown up in New Zealand yet.
I particularly like, with these slightly more targeted to collector figures, you know, with the 50th anniversary sort of branding on the card, that they are sort of doing a larger quantity of each figure in each case that goes out to the stores. So if you really like to keep your figures on cards, then you can go and check card quality, the paint app on the figure, if there's like an accessory loose or anything like that. I particularly like to make sure that the faces and head sculpts and things like that on figures that I know I'm going to keep carded look nice and crisp in the way that they are packaged, and they're not sort of askew or obviously the big dings or scratches to backing cards. So yeah, if haven't seen these at any other retailer yet. They seem like they're just at Farmers
for
this point. So that's definitely, you know, you're buying collector's items in the kids' toy aisles. So if you're keen to pick these up going early so that you can choose from what's there on the shelf, means that you can get the best quality figure for your collection.
And a new product that we reported on, available at Mighty Ape, are pewter Star Wars lapel pins. There are 6 to choose from, priced at $15 each, so little pins that can be worn on your apparel or on a backpack or just plugged into a pin board if that's how you want to collect them. 6 available: a Mythosaur signet, a Baby Yoda, both the Imperial and Rebel Alliance logos, and Darth Vader helmet and Stormtrooper helmet.
These are quite fun. Sort of a little classier than the standard sort of badge styles or even the enamel pins that are very, very popular. I quite like the sort of monotone metal pewter finish of these pins, and they're not too expensively priced.
And just for the sake of rounding out the New Zealand store reports, I'll mention the New Zealand Mint Baby Yoda Grogu silver coin. Unfortunately, it is not available right now, but just for completeness, I'll mention it. This is an example of the New Zealand Mint Star Wars coins selling out within minutes of their release, literal minutes. Hey, but it is worth mentioning though, because a trick that not everyone was necessarily aware of, but is sometimes useful in these circumstances, is that Sideshow Collectibles also carries the New Zealand Mint coins. So if you're trying for a specific character or to complete a set and you happen to miss out locally, do check Sideshow Collectibles. Just do a search. These were available for quite a few days after they sold out in New Zealand. They are now sold out on Sideshow Collectibles as well, unfortunately. But keep that in mind for future Star Wars coin releases from New Zealand Mint.
You will have to pay tax because it's technically an international shipment and shipping fees from Sideshow. But this is still a good backup option if you miss out locally, because these are incredibly sought after items.
I think it comes in at about $40-$45 more than the New Zealand price in total. But for these really hard to find items, sometimes that's the price we pay.
And it's also quite tricky trying to buy legal tender coins internationally, if not from a retail. I know that there are certain limitations with New Zealand Post and selling on Facebook or eBay because these are legal tender. So it definitely is preferable to buy direct from a vendor rather than from a reseller.
Okay, let's move on to talk about the Bad Batch. We're going to talk about Episode 3 that screened just under a week ago. We're expecting Episode 4 in a few hours later on this evening. Episode 3 was entitled The Replacements. In this episode, we saw Bad Batch with Omega have to crash land on a remote moon after their ship was damaged, escaping from Seleucumai. And in the process of trying to repair the ship, an Auto Moondragon steals the part they need to repair it. A chase ensues, and Omega plays a specific role in getting that back without having to resort to violence. That was an interesting sort of plot thread. But there's a simultaneous plot thread that's developing back on Kamino, where Tarkin and Rampart have just put Crosshair in command of a new unit of conscripted soldiers, who are the replacements for the clone troopers. So there's a strong thread developing there, friction between clone troopers and conscripted soldiers, and they go off on a mission to Saw Gerrera's base camp on Onderon. Saw Gerrera is not there, but a few interesting things take place that heighten the tension between those two Imperial groups, and really speaks to a developing thread where we don't know where the role of the clone troopers is going to head. And back on Kamino, conversations with Prime Minister Lamassu sort of reveal that there may be other things taking place in terms of goals for clone troopers in order to make up for the fact that they're not going to be used as part of the Imperial military to quite the same extent.
This was an interesting episode. We're seeing a continuation of threads. It was a little unclear about whether the Bad Batch would be a little more episodic, like the Clone Wars. You know, they're going to do something over here, something over there. This does seem to be, you know, telling a singular story from multiple viewpoints. We're sort of seeing, because we've got the Bad Batch sort of technically split into two. We've got Crosshair with the Empire and the rest of the members plus Omega sort of not exactly Republic-aligned yet, but rebellion, I should say. But we're sort of seeing where their viewpoints
and
lie.
Sympathies, yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, with the Auto Moon Dragon, this sort of feels very reminiscent of the Minox in the Space Slug sort of cave in Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Even when Omega reacts to seeing it out the window, felt very much like Princess Leia. And I thought it was nice that this was a storyline where the space animal didn't get killed. There seems to be sort of like an ongoing thread that a lot of creatures in Star Wars sort of end up sort of being, you know, aggressive or somewhat meeting their demise. This was kind of a nicer ending for it, and a sort of a sweet moment for Omega, sort of proving herself helpful, but using her own sort of slightly different set of skills. She picks up a blaster, but she doesn't necessarily think that's her first and only option, which I thought was nice. She's obviously got a compassion there, even though you know, she's been obviously quite isolated as a child. She isn't sort of hardened military or cynical.
It's quite possibly a lead up to that non-violent approach sort of becoming absorbed by the Bad Batch. And like you say, we don't know where their loyalties head, whether or not they're going to become anti-imperial or to what extent they're going to become anti-imperial. And there's obviously going to be strong influences from Omega to that end, I think.
And I like the that it's not so cut and dry, okay, we're not using clones anymore, we're switching to conscriptions. We see Admiral Rampart sort of really pushing for conscripted soldiers, sort of with the viewpoint that if you can get somebody to willingly sign up, they will be more loyal to you than a clone that is created. We don't really know. I mean, it would be an interesting sort of what if story about whether Order 66 would have been quite as complete and successful if the clones hadn't had inhibitor chips, if they had simply been told to follow orders. And so it's kind of an interesting sort of viewpoint, seeing Rampart really trying to prove to Tarkin, and we see just how far Crosshair will go. He often says, you know, a good soldier follows orders, and we see him put that to the absolute max when he kills one of the conscription soldiers that questions him, when he goes to basically execute a civilian, and the others aren't so sure. Crosshair makes it pretty clear to the viewers and to the ones around him that he will do whatever it takes for the Empire, which is an interesting, I kind of want to see how this is going to play out, because Rampart is really pushing for conscription soldiers, and he kind of almost brags that it was soldiers that completed the mission that the Bad Batch refused to do, but it was actually a clone trooper that was the reason why that mission was sort of done in its completedness of sort of wiping out this rebellion cell with
there's quite a lot to
civilians there,
unpack there. And I think it really does speak to just what you're saying there, the fact that unlike the Clone Wars, where story arcs tended to be a few episodes at most, if not singular episodes, this feels like there are going to be a couple of parallel threads spanning the entire season, because there's quite big stories to tell and unpack. And we know that ultimately the Empire is made up of conscripted soldiers, not clones. But what happens to the clones and how they get exactly to that point, there's quite a lot that I think really needs to be explained, not just left hanging.
Yeah, but it's more complex than just we have to pay to make clones versus if we get people to sign up, that's free labor, essentially slaves. But I'm liking this kind of undercurrent of the Kaminoan leadership being a bit sneaky. We hear them talking about wanting to sort of play. It sounds like they're wanting to play around with some of the clone genetic material to perhaps make a new generation of maybe sort of like a second gen, and maybe taking genetic material from Crosshair because he is successful and he's kind of a bit of an alternate version of the clone troopers. So I'm curious to see what's going to go there.
Yeah,
whether we're
going to
get new characters, or is this just sort of an intrigue? Is the Empire going to find out that they're kind of trying to go behind their backs?
I like that whole Kamino thread, because it is a branch from the other standard threads. That's in some ways a little bit unexpected. We know the setup's pretty clear about Bad Batch, you know, from the early episodes and where they're heading, and then separately the evolution of the Imperial Army from using clone troopers to conscripted soldiers is fairly obvious. But yeah, the Kamino's involvement, that's a new development in some ways. And I'm keen to see where that actually heads and how that pans out.
They have sort of like a very sort of kind, peaceful sort of demeanor. But so it's interesting to see them sort of being a bit sneaky. They obviously have a financial incentive. I know Dex in episode 2 sort of talks about them being sort of secretive people. Obviously things have been sort of, you know, done in the background to try and hide the planet itself, you know, from the Jedi and all that kind of mystery surrounding that. But it's sort of interesting seeing the sort of sneakiness from the inside.
Their culture has some really complex undertones that are sort of hidden underneath that superficial appearance and interaction with outsiders.
In earlier Clone Wars episodes, we dealt with the clone troopers themselves dealing with the sort of the moral dilemma of being created for war and things like that. And we sort of see the Kaminoans doing it from a purely business standpoint. They don't seem too concerned with the ethics of creating people purely to be sort of war fodder. No, they see it as like a business transaction. So it's kind of a really interesting thread that we're seeing here, and I can't wait to see where this goes.
Yeah, so I enjoyed that episode and the different threads and different aspects to it. And I like the fact that by the time we're talking about this in the podcast, we're actually coming up on the next episode fairly shortly. So tonight at 7 p.m. New Zealand time, we can expect to see further development of this whole parallel plots. The episodes being only about 30 minutes each are okay, but always leave us wanting more. So it is a bit of a wait from episode to episode.
It always seems like a big wait for these weekly episodes, but before you know it, the whole thing's over and you're just wanting the next season of a Star Wars show to come along and fill in the gap, or you just go back and rewatch the series again in its sort of full entirety, sort of marathon it.
I'm feeling really, the Bad Batch has already grown on me really strongly, and I'm feeling a stronger need to watch them more than once, even per week, and certainly to string them all together when they're all finished, just to see the whole story arc without the gaps, just to binge watch it. I think we're probably going to do that. Okay, so we'll talk about episode 4 next week, and we hope you'll be able to join us. We appreciate you joining us this time around, but that's about it for this installment. I guess we are done doing talking. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you taking your time to listen to us share our passion for Star Wars. Stay tuned to our website, swnz.co.nz, for Star Wars news for New Zealanders and another podcast episode next week. Jump on over to either our Facebook group or the SWNZ message boards to discuss all the latest Star Wars news with other Kiwi fans. Thank you for listening.
And may the Force be with you.